Jim Taylor back on the WRMJ Sportsline on this Saturday morning. Let's get to it. We have Marty Flaherty with us on this Saturday morning. A nice conversation over the next hour. 40 years for Marty Flaherty. So started back in about 1977. Congratulations and good to see you this morning. Yeah,
thanks,
sir.
Jim. Thanks for having me on this morning. And first off, before I forget, happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there.
That's right. And I was thinking about it today. Have you ever thought how many coaches you've worked for in 40 years?
Oh, I mean, I've been throughout the state. You know, I've worked 3 state tournaments, and obviously with that goes like about, I'm thinking it's around 18, 19 sectionals, 5 super sectionals. I think I counted this regional championship this year in 3A. Probably like 32 or so regionals. So yeah, I've been to, except for the southernmost part of the state, the Chicago area, and we'll touch on that later. I've probably seen most of this state and met most of these coaches. Yeah. So
yeah, it's pretty impressive. And then how many partners?
Oh, I've Bob Rowett, a longtime partner. I think quite frankly, and I know people have said this as a twosome, in the old two-man days. In our time, I don't think there was a better two-man crew. Personally, I really don't. I think we gelled off each other pretty good. He was an excellent official, and then of course, as we move into the three-man days, you know, there's guys like Dave Hancock, who quite frankly is one of the best officials that just, you know, he just walked out and called the game, didn't care about anything else. One of the best all time, and a great friend of mine. Another great official I've worked with who's now doing basically Division I college basketball is Colin Dotson. He's worked like 12 to 15 Division I games this year. He's going to be a rock star his Division I will just keep going up and up. He's an excellent young man, excellent official. And the list kind of goes on. In the last few years, I've kind of just jumped in with whoever, and so I learned a lot from everybody, so it's been a great time. I've worked with a lot of great people.
Yeah, and I guess the one thing about any occupation, one, you have to enjoy doing it, right?
Right, exactly.
And I tell people, too, the people that figure it out, they can't always take themselves too seriously.
Right, yeah.
I mean, that's the part of the equation where I know when I see people that are good at what they do, one, they really enjoy it, and two, they don't take themselves too seriously.
I've always said there's, to me, in officiating, there's 3 senses. There's common sense. You have to have common sense to be a decent official. There's sense of urgency. That's the second sense, because you have to be ready for anything at any time. And the last sense is the sense of humor. You have to be able to laugh at yourself, laugh at your surroundings, and some nights it's easier than others, but I've laughed a lot in 40 years. I can tell you that. I always tell officials before a game, let's have some fun tonight, and that's usually what we do anymore. So.
You know, from a general public evaluation standpoint, basketball officiating is, I don't know if it's fair to say, the easiest from a fan perspective, because everybody can watch basketball on TV and think they're an expert, and then you're in a confined setting in a gymnasium. And those so-called experts then can come out. You see what I'm saying in terms of other sports?
I compare basketball officiating to like...
3 seconds in the lane, Flaherty!
It's almost like being on The Price is Right and you're a contestant and the studio audience are the fans and they're screaming out the whole time. You know, it's just like... And, you know, you seem to be the dumbest person there almost, because the fans are obviously the smartest. So some nights... You just kind of get a good laugh out of what most people say.
What's the like funniest thing somebody's ever said to you from the fans, where you had to say, "Hey, that's pretty creative. I like that."
Let me see. I think I was in Rova one night
in the great town of Oneida.
Yeah, and somebody yelled about my mustache and my hair. I don't know, too long a hair, nice mustache. You know, just general stuff. You know. I'm sure there's other things, but, you know, I usually get picked on with this mustache a lot for some reason, so.
Yeah, well, you mentioned the three-man crew. I mean, that's the big change.
Oh, yeah.
From when you started. How long's the three-man IHSA been involved?
I think for the most part, the three-man, and I'm trying to think when I think probably about 94, 95 was when the IHSA finally started putting three-person crews on regionals. And I think that's when I mean, before that, it was predominantly officials could, like, bring an extra man and work a three-man, you know, maybe that 3 or 4 or 5 years before that, because it kind of segued in from 88 through 94. You know, once in a while we'd work three-man, once in a while the schools would pay for it, once in a while we'd just end up just paying the guy on the side out of our checks. And, you know, actually, it's so much easier. It makes it and there's a lot better court coverage. I remember Don Morris used to tell me the story of when he played UT, and there was only two men. Well, on one side, the bench side for the most part, that's where Cliff Talley, when there was no official in that area, would just
old school Western Big Six
hack the heck out of players. He would say, on the side where the referee isn't going to be, we're going to attack. And I remember Don Morris calling it the karate chop defense. And he would just Cliff would just have him, you know, so mad because the officials wouldn't see it or wouldn't call it or whatever. So,
you know, and I was thinking about the one thing with you two in terms of you have to give back, and that's another part of the equation of being good at what you do and making sure that it's a sustaining profession, that you get people that are interested in it, and you promote that, and you get involved. And, you know, I see that you officiate a lot of different venues, and I think within the last couple of years you'll come back and do a, somebody said you were doing a, like a Prairie Land Junior High conference game or tournament. Those are things that you still want to be interested
in. Yeah, I mean, you know, there's nothing wrong with, you know, I think working for the kids, and, you know, maybe somebody in the stands saying, hey, that guy works a lot of varsity basketball, you know, and I think if a kid sees you there and you're working hard, and that's one thing I'll never be accused of. I work hard every night. And even if it's a junior high game or even if it's a state tournament, I am going to hustle every night. I'm getting a little old. My knees aren't as what they used to be, but still, I will work hard and I will make sure those kids get a decent game out of me.
Well, and I tell people that there is like in-season Marty and Summer League Marty, and I really appreciate like Summer League Marty, because when my oldest played like Summer League basketball, you guys officiate at the Orion Summer League, and it's more of a laid back type of thing. I mean, of course, you know, some, it was funny because John Elder was in here 3 weeks ago, and he said, you know, some of these parents take some of this off season stuff just way too seriously. You know, you don't have to go to these summer league games or these 7-on-7 things. You really don't. And I always like you in summer league because it's more of like, when you're officiating, it's more like instruction for the kids too. It's like, hey, hands off, you know. Whatever, you know, the instructions, you can't do that, or other than just blowing the whistle all the time. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's like a laid-back atmosphere. It's almost a play-by-play sometimes as an official, which is totally wrong, but I do it anyway. It's like, come on, you can't do that. Or, you know, it's just like, don't do that. You know, I'm just almost begging, you know. I mean, for the most part, these are not Super Bowls. Nobody's going to win the state tournament in the summer. Just go have fun and get better, you know? So, and that's the way I take it.
All right, a lot of stories to get to, and we have a list. You hinted at some of those already, and I know you've worked, at least in the Quad City area, you know, games involving great players, great coaches, great situations. I know in the mid-80s, you know, in terms of the Illinois basketball world, a lot of it involved Rock Island High School and the Duncan Reed legacy, and of course the Sonny Cox, Chicago Martin Luther King legacy up in the Chicago Public League, and you were involved in a little bit of that.
Yeah,
right?
There was three games in the Quad Cities with King, Chicago King, and Rock Island. One was at UT, I think, earlier in '86, and then I worked the game. I believe it fell right on Martin Luther King birthday in 87. And then there was another game in 88. I only worked the game in 87. We'll get to some of that. But I do remember the hype for the game in 87 was most tremendous hype for any high school basketball game. I mean, this was a non-conference game on a Saturday night. And, you know, Rocky, I don't know who they played on Friday night. It didn't work that game. But Saturday night, I know, like I said, Sonny did not want to come. He did everything. There was a two-year contract that somebody signed. Now, I don't know who signed it, an AD signed it, or if Sonny signed it under duress or whatever. But Duncan Reed was going to hold Sonny to that contract. And so, I mean, as I understand, there was even IHSA got involved and said, yes, Coach Cox, you have to go to Rock Island in 1987 and 1988. And so the night of the game, Sonny was not very happy. He was, you know, we walked out. I worked with Joe Thompson that night. Sonny didn't want any part of shaking our hands. He didn't shake Duncan's hands. He wouldn't have shaken President Reagan's hand if he would have been there. But the game went on, and, you know, Sonny's just crazy from the tip. And about, I can tell you, like the Thursday night before the game, Jim Murphy, who was a great Quad City official, also baseball coach with Alleman, great man. He calls me, says, hey, Marty, let's, you know, Sonny's coming here. He's thinking he's going to get drilled. He's going to get it stuck to him, whatever. Try to give him some rope. Try to talk him off the ledge early. So I remember about 3 minutes into the game, I go over to Sonny, and he's just every call. It wouldn't have mattered if it was out of bounds. If Marcus Liberty would have slapped it five rows in the bleachers, he would have thought it went off the Rocky kid, whatever. And I coach, you know what? I said, all we want to do is work the game tonight. We don't want any trouble. And Sonny Cox looks at me and goes, son, you got trouble tonight. And so anyway, we work the game. The Selby kid tips it in at the buzzer to beat Rocky. I race off the floor with Joe Thompson, come back and knock on our door, not even a knock on our door, open the door like not even a minute after the game, and here's Duncan. And he starts pointing at me, says, why do we have to be so blank and nice, Marty? He says, can't we ever just do something and just, you know, this guy did this, this guy did that. And then he says, why don't you just go up and work the blank and public league? And I always remember that's kind of a standing joke. Why don't I go work the public league? So, but, you know, I actually had believe it or not, I had signed a two-year contract to work the game in 88 also.
That was up there in Chicago?
No, that was in Rock Island also. It was, and anyway, about a month before
the game. How does that work? They get back-to-back home games again?
It was just part of the contract that Sonny didn't like, I know. And I know that about a month before the game, I got a call. I won't go into this very much, but I got a call saying I wouldn't be working that game. So I was taken off that game. But I do want to say a few words about Marcus Liberty. He was a tremendous young man, very polite young man. All he really wanted to do that night was just come down and play basketball. I don't think he was too worried about what Sonny thought or what Duncan Reed thought or what the full house 6,300 fans at Rocky Fieldhouse thought. He just just wanted to come and play basketball. He was, like I said, a tremendous young man, very polite. And a little backstory on that. I know you tweeted out a picture. I have that picture in an 8.5 by 11. And about 4 years, 5 years later, I had some contacts in Denver, and that's where Marcus Liberty was playing. And my brother knew the assistant general manager of the Nuggets, and he's mentioned, hey, why don't you bring that picture out? Maybe Marcus Liberty will sign it. And so supposedly it was all set up, and we were in this little office in McNichols Arena right before the game, and the assistant general manager comes down and talks to my brother for about 30, 45 seconds, and my brother comes to me and says, he's not going to sign your picture tonight. And I kind of go, well, that's weird. Did he say why? He goes, no, he didn't say why. So anyway, we turn on the radio after the game. It was the Nuggets and the Supersonics, I think, and we find out the Nuggets radio announcer says, yes, and right after the game tonight, Marcus Liberty was traded to the Detroit Pistons. So I never got that picture signed.
And,
so.
And for those people that may be too young to know about kind of the legacy of Marcus Liberty, he played on the 89 Flying Illini team. And when you look back at that team, people forget that of all the players that were recruited on that team, he was the most highly touted recruit they had. I don't know if it's fair to say that it didn't pan out, but he was one of the top recruits in the country. He went hardship. He left after that 89
right.
Final Four team. Mm-hmm. He came off the bench on that team and got drafted by the Nuggets and had a short career in the NBA.
Right.
So let's talk about some other people that you've worked for over the years.
Larry Schulte, first, genuinely nice man, a great coach. He is so competitive. He wants to beat you in jacks, tiddlywinks, and basketball. But like I said, a genuinely nice man. The best story I've got about Larry is one night working, I think it's East Moline somewhere. It might have been at UT, might have been, I don't know, at Alleman or Wharton Fieldhouse. I'm not sure. But there was a play in the second quarter, I think, where his kid, he thought his kid got hooked by a UT guy to go around to score a basket. So, of course, that's supposed to be an offensive foul. Larry and I had a discussion. It really wasn't much of a discussion. Larry told me what he thought, and it was, you know, it was Larry Schulte telling Marty Flaherty, hey, you're wrong, you didn't get that right, blah, 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 you know, and he went off on me pretty good, and I probably deserved it. So, anyway, I think Alleman ended up winning. That was a pretty good team they had that year. I'm not sure quite what year that was, but we next day I go to the Saturday morning newspaper. And in the paper is the story on the game, and there's this almost giant blown-up picture, and I swear Larry Schulte might have taken it, of this UT kid hooking his kid and going around him. Yeah. I mean, a picture of the hook, the arm bar and everything, yeah. And it's just like, it almost looked like Larry Schulte took the picture and said, hey, Marty, look, 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 look. So anyway, I'm working that next day is the Iowa-Illinois shootout at Augustana. And I go up to the hospitality room before my game, and, of course, the first person I see is Larry Schulte. And he says, hey, Marty, see the paper today? And I go, no, Coach, I never read the paper. Too much negative stuff in there for me. So, but, I mean, like I said, Larry Schulte is one of the great coaches in this area for a lot of years. And I don't know, he just, like I said, he's so competitive. He's cut from a good mold and great coach, nice man.
Yeah, and, you know, other Western Big Six, I mean, you've worked a lot at Western Big Six stuff, so surely there's got to be a Quincy story down there at the Devil's Brew.
Yeah, oh, yeah. You know, first time I worked at Quincy, I'm thinking it was like 89 or something like that, and, you know, it was a non-con game. It was a Saturday night, but every night was always full down there in those days. I mean, if you've never been to Quincy to see a high school basketball game, just go sometime. Even, you know, the crowds aren't what they used to be. They aren't in any place now. But I was there my first night standing out on the court, and the place was going to be full. This kindly elderly lady comes up to me and says, hello, young man, how are you? And I go, I'm just fine, ma'am. How are you tonight? And she asked me where I'm from. She asked me about my family. You know, I'm thinking maybe on Sunday I'm getting invited over for chicken and dumplings or pot roast, you know? And then she says, well, how do you referee? I go, well, just referee the game. She says, well, let me tell you how we like our games refereed here at Quincy High School, young man. We like you to let them play. You just stay out of the way and things will be fine tonight. And all of a sudden I thought Rod Serling was going to walk out from the Twilight Zone and tell me, and then I realized I was just in Quincy. Yeah. So
how old of a lady was she?
She had to be late 70s, early 80s. And she was letting me,
like right before the game?
Right before the game. She just let me have it and telling me how we're going to call this game tonight. So,
well, I know there's some other stuff, a list of bullet points here. How about Orient Illini West?
Orient Illini West, that was an interesting game. And I call that the shirtless game. And I'll tell you why in a minute here. But there was at the end of the game, Orient's down four. They score a bucket. This was when Brent Hutton was coaching. And anyway, so there's...
This is Orient.
Anyway, they score a bucket, and there's little or no time left. And so Orient gets to two, and the buzzer goes, and I wave it off. And, you know, Coach Hutton thinks, oh, there should be another second or two. You know, we should put time back on. I said, nope, that's game. I'm working with Todd Gilmore and Brian Swanson. And we go in that middle hallway locker room, and our door's shut, and all of a sudden I'm hearing, Marty, there should be 2 seconds, Marty, you know, and it's just this constant screaming for, like, I don't know, a minute or two, and I just keep hearing, and I'm taking my shirt off. I'm down to my bare belly, so to speak, and I've got one shoe off and one shoe on. It's a bad visual even for radio, I know. So I got one shoe off, one shoe on, and I'm just getting so mad. I keep hearing, Marty! So I finally go out and...
With your shirt off?
Yeah, with my shirt off,
my sock off,
my shoe off, and there's Nathan, the AD from Orion, and there's a Henry County cop, and as soon as I walk out the door, they're standing right next to me, and they're like waving their hands, no, they're like saying, don't get involved. And I look to my left, and there's Coach Hutton with his whole team and his whole coaching staff, and they start yelling at me. And so I'm yelling back at them with no shirt on, one shoe off, one shoe on, and we're just yelling.
Sounds like a bad episode of Cops, man.
And I'm just yelling, no, we're not putting any time back on. Just forget it. The game's over. And I'm just yelling.
The voice you were doing was, by the way, Brent Hutton helps us on football games at Orion. So that's the voice you're impersonating.
Yeah. And it's just like, it was just went back and forth for like a minute or two, and we finally just stopped.
But the image is you have your shirt off.
Yeah, I got my shirt off, and, you know, every time I run into somebody from the Orion staff or Coach Hutton and his wife, it's just like we always good laugh about that one. So
now you worked an 89 battle between Orion and Sherrard. Was that a postseason game?
Yeah, it was a regional championship.
So that would have been like an Eric Lawson.
Eric Lawson was a freshman that year. Orion had a great team. Orion was coached by Coach Olson.
Yeah. And Fleck was coaching.
He had some assistant. I don't remember his name. Hutton, I think it was. But that game was probably, and Bob Rote and I worked that together at Orion, packed house, you know, all the way back on the stage. And I just remember the game. If there was ever a perfect game, and I will say this by officials, Bob and I probably called that night because everything fell into place, Jim. You have to understand some nights the level of play takes you to where the level of officiating goes to, and most people don't understand that. And the level of play that night was very, very good, and it made it very, very easy to officiate the game. But I do remember... Greg Orendorf from Orion sank a three-pointer with no time left. And I'll tell you a funny story about that one, too, in a second. But Orion ended up beating Sherrard. It was, like I said, one of the greatest high school basketball game I've ever been involved in. And after the game, we came out because we'd ran off so fast because we just counted the bucket. But both Bob and I knew it was a three-pointer because I think it was like there was on a break and they shot it. Like, so we both had an angle to where his feet were behind the line clearly. Anyway, we actually came back out after the game and they'd only counted it as a two. We found the official score and said, hey, we ran off so fast, we just want to let you know that was a three-pointer. And so I believe that's how it was scored finally. But yeah, it was, that to me epitomizes small school, high school basketball. I mean, the crowd and everything.
But the three-pointer didn't, that impacted the outcome?
No. Okay. It was a tie game when he put that up.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was, it didn't, no. We just got out of there because we knew any point would win. So.
Yeah.
So, anyway, but.
All right, talking with Marty Flaherty this morning, 40 years of officiating, much more to come on the WRMJ Sportsline on WRMJ and WRMJ.com.